Strap yourself in,
because we're set up, switched on, and ready to go.
Yes, sir. Reading you loud and clear. Clear. The clock has started.
Episode of our podcast. Today we are going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our field. By sharing our collective expertise, we will show you how to harness, control, and use your own skill set to achieve ultimate success and live the life you want. And now, please welcome your host.
Welcome to this week's Smallcast podcast. This podcast is designed for small government contractors, service providers, and manufacturers as part of the government contractor ecosystem, connecting people, organizations, and resources. I'm your host, Just Nate, and this week we have Dennis. Dennis, welcome aboard.
Good morning, Nate.
And yeah, it's weird. It's morning this time. It's the first one we've done in a morning.
I need more coffee, too.
Yeah, well, you should have brought some before you come in.
It's fine.
I saw you ate some, like, pumpkin pie, apple pie?
It was apple pie.
Why do you have apple pie already?
My daughter made me apple pie for Father's Day, so that was the last piece. I ate the whole
pie. That's why you didn't share.
That's correct.
I wonder, why are you having problems? You ate the whole pie.
It was good.
Okay, so Dennis, on the phone, we have somebody from Wyoming on the phone. We have the owner and CEO of Lucid Optics, Mr. Jason Wilson, aboard. Welcome, Jason.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, it's always good to have somebody call in. We prefer to have them in person, but, you know, I guess the commute down to Colorado Springs was just a little bit too much for you.
That would have been.
Hey, so Jason, where are you in Wyoming?
We're in Riverton. It's almost dead center. We are 2 hours out of Casper, 3 hours out of Jackson Hole, pretty much right in the middle of the state.
Right, you're on the eastern slope, right? What do we call it? The front range side, right? And down here, we call it the front range. Yeah. It's the eastern side of the Rockies.
Well, we're on the eastern side of the Tetons. We're right in the middle of the Wind River.
Right, Wind River, yep.
Yeah, I could have taken the equipment with me this weekend as I'm heading that direction. Actually,
we should go visit him.
This weekend, I'll be like probably a half hour from him, unless where he is up could be up mountain.
And you got the river flowing right through there, right? I have a friend from Riverton, actually.
We're going to doing the dinner and drinks on the back deck for 4th of July, and we'll probably fire the cannon off once or twice. It lives in my front yard, so if you want a little freedom, come on out.
Oh, trust me, brother, we love freedom.
The Western Yankees. All right. So tell us about Lucid Optics, Jason. What do you guys do?
We're predominantly weapon systems mounted, red dot sights, rifle scopes.
Say that again, because you kind of faded out for a second, but something about scopes. Say it slowly so we can hear.
Yeah, so weapons mounted, red dot sights, and rifle scopes. We have some observation optics for the most part, but we are predominantly weapons mounted systems.
You're talking about for large caliber weapons or handguns? You're talking about rifles? What size of systems are you talking about?
Well, our optics have been put on top of everything from Dillons and Dishkas all the way down to 22 long rifles. So we're technically small arms.
Okay. And primarily for DOD or for U.S. government, state government kind of agencies?
We've had individuals purchase that way. We're not purchased on a contract basis. We do a lot of foreign aid type of stuff through JSOC. We do some contracting that way, but nothing for the big green machine here yet.
Yet. I like that. Yet. Okay.
And what's my ignorance, what's a red dot scope? Is it the red dot? I mean, is that what it is? It's just the laser sight? I thought that's more the sight versus the scope.
Jason, I apologize.
Creative. Red dot does indicate the type of aiming point you're using.
Yeah, I apologize.
It's
Jason.
The laser sight, though. It's not the It's not the scope.
He's not as free as we want him to be yet. We'll get him there.
It's not the scope. Right?
It's not the scope?
Right. It's just the aim point.
Correct. Now.
Yeah, it's the type of optic that you're using. You're using a red dot holographic optic.
Right.
And that's for close quarters acquisition.
Now, Jason, in Wyoming, is that legal to have on any form of hunting rifle? Because I know in Colorado it is not, because it is battery operated, right?
Yeah, so in Wyoming, it's completely legal. When you cross that border, you should feel a huge weight lifted, because as soon as you come into Wyoming, pretty much everything's legal.
Yes.
We get to do things that Colorado doesn't.
Did I mention I'm coming to Wyoming this weekend?
You should come hang out.
So on the scope side, what are you guys what's kind of the magnification ranges? What are you guys doing on that?
We have a couple different lines on the scope side. We have a LPVO, which is a low power variable optic. That's a 1-6. We're bringing in a 1-10 coming in 2022. We also have a second focal plane hunting optic. In our L5 series, that is a 2-16, a 4-16, and a 6-24 magnification sizes. And then in our MLX line, which is a precision competition optic, it's first focal plane based out of Mills. In 2022, late, we'll be bringing in the new TH series, which is a kind of a new step into a higher price point for us, but it's going to be a really high-end first focal plane, mill-based competitive optic.
So do you guys do the manufacturing there, all the aspects of it, or do you guys outsource?
Yeah, so all of our design, engineering, and prototyping is done here. We get our first articles made. Pretty much that's my job. And then we outsource the materials. We outsource the manufacturing processes to get them made in a price point that's able to be inserted into the market where it sits.
Right. So you do some of the, and you do the testing there, I'm assuming, the testing of the systems, right?
Probably going to offend a whole bunch of folks, so if you guys get hate mail, I apologize in advance. But here's a little truth bomb. In the optics world, nothing's really made here in its entirety.
Right. That's in most worlds, I think.
It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
There's a lot of U.S. assembled here, and there's a lot of games that are people playing with their country of origin. But at the end of the day, there's only two places on the planet where the silica for glass is suitable, and that is Austria and China.
Yeah. The glass, it comes down to the glass, the actual glass itself, huh?
Yeah, the actual glass itself is Chinese material. Any of the quality optics are running through the Japanese SHOTT factory, and that's an SCHOTT. Way back in the day, Carl Zeiss and Mr. Schott got together and decided that medical grade instrumentation and camera lenses was going to stay in Austria as far as the Zeiss family of lenses are concerned. And they were going to develop a factory in Japan so they could take advantage of the quality control, but they still got access to the Chinese material. And that's where all of our modern sporting glass comes from.
That and the capability of actually grinding your optics to near perfection, that takes a lot of work. And like you said, the quality side.
It does. It also takes a lot of infrastructure in the U.S. because the EPA has regulated us to environmental standards that are probably right and safe and sane for us. However, they do hamstring manufacturing in some ways. The action of grinding glass creates silica dust, which is really, really bad for you to breathe in. So a damp, clean environment is necessary to do that in a safe environment, almost a clean room environment. And for the cost of the items, that makes it prohibitive in a lot of ways.
That's interesting.
So what I am curious, so as a hunter myself, I always want the best optics that I can afford or that my wife will let me procure. And there is a massive difference, right, in price. And it's not like it's a gradual scale. It's like, you have everything, you know, from $100 to $400 in most people's rifles to, and then it jumps up to like $3,000 for like a Zeiss. That's
correct. That gap in the middle is closing. There's a lot of players starting to come into the market and fill that. That's how we actually became a company, is there was a large gap in the market between red dot sites. Take it back to our origins in 2009. When I was starting this out, I was the optics guy at Brunton for a long time. And when I got jettisoned from that due to a corporate takeover and layoffs, there wasn't much to do in Riverton, Wyoming for an optics guy, you can imagine. So I hung out my own shingle because as a three-gun competitor, there was not much outside the novelty class, you know, the $99 and down optics. And then it jumped right to military grade, $650 and up. So there was an opportunity. So I took advantage of it, knowing the folks that I did. And we built an optic in the $300 category. And we've run that whole model ever since. What we do and do well is find that gap in the middle where most folks can afford it, but offer them the quality of the items that are much higher end. We're not a Leupold or Night Force name brand, but we play in the same level of lenses quite often. So for dollar, what we do is we offer the best possible value for, you know, lowest possible cost.
So what is it? Is it the name brand that costs, or is there glass that they get? Is that just that much clearer? Or, I mean, I know there's lots of different things that go into this, the coatings that they put on the glass. I mean, I've saw some binoculars that are sitting at $10,000 for a pair of binoculars. I'm like, yeah, I'm sure they're great, but are they $10,000 great compared to something that I paid $200, $300 for?
Now we're talking about a detail in the market, like you would talk about a sommelier with wine. As you increase in price, there is going to be a little bit better quality level. A lot of the times it comes into the form of quality control and engineering. So what they are is they're better suited for rough use, or they have a little bit better clarity. And what I say by a little, it's a little. The average operator wouldn't notice the difference between a $1,000 optic and a $3,000 optic.
Yeah.
They're just not going to actually perceive that with their eye, right? Where the difference comes in is brand name and marketing budgets and what they've chosen to do from a warranty perspective. There's a company out there that has made their way on a forever no fault warranty, right?
Yep.
Well, all that means is you paid for three of those items in the original purchase.
Yeah.
So. It's an insurance program. So at the end of the day, it's a good piece of glass, but they're playing the numbers game on warranties. A lot of folks won't even mess with a warranty. They'll just go buy a new one, right?
Yep.
That works in their favor because you paid for, say, three of those optics in that one initial purchase, and they've banked that money.
Well, yeah.
But if they have to replace one, if they have a warranty issue, it's no skin off their teeth because you, have, as the individual purchaser, have already paid for it.
Yeah, that's already paid for. That's why, as I was growing up through this, I would actually find those optics as used optics for a lifetime guarantee. And that way I didn't pay that extraordinary price up front, but I still got the warranty.
That's right. And to be competitive in this market, you have to do a customer service initiative like a lifetime warranty. We do it as well. Ours is a shade different in the fact that we are going to take care of the issue no matter what. However, it's not a license to call us and abuse us. So if you called up and you were absolutely obnoxious and a jerk, we're still going to take care of you. It's just going to take a little longer than it normally would. If you're cool and tell us the story and work with us on it, you're going to get taken care of in 24 hours.
That's awesome.
We just don't see enough of warranty to actually even have a whole person here at the shop doing that job. So it's easy for us to handle it fast.
You know what?
But if you're a jerk, that's showing a delay.
But that's anything, right? I mean, but I've seen companies that do kind of the same thing you guys are doing, but with a little bit of a twist. You know, they'll say, we'll take care of you, no problem. I want the story, though, and I want we're going to keep the last product, right? Of whatever it was. So it's kind of cool then. I've actually been to some of these facilities then. I think Leatherman even does this as well, where they'll say, cool, we'll take care of you for life, but we're going to keep your Leatherman, and I need the story to go with it, and then I want to put this up in my museum to show that, oh, yeah, This thing dropped out of a airplane at 30,000 feet up in the air, and this is what it looks like now. So they have a story to go with it. It's part of their marketing, right?
Right. We do that as well. In my museum case I have here in my shop, we have one of our red dots that was on a rifle. The individual was part of a group that got hit with an IED. And the optic still functions. It's got some cracked glass, but the optic still functions. Huh. And we replace that, no questions.
Yeah, obviously. That's I like those stories.
And we also use it as a field testing R&D. You know, our customers are commonly the type that could break a bowling ball. So when they send something back, we now have an understanding of this is a potential break point. So we can over-engineer that in the next production run. So it allows us to organically evolve our product from the ways that our customers are going to break it.
Do you, at your Riverton facility there, how many people work for you then?
So we have 3 employees. Okay. And I've got about 25 independent contractors that do specific things across the country for us.
So he's a very small business.
We're a very small company, but we're moving very nimble. We can cover a lot of ground quickly.
Right.
And if we need to turn a different direction, we can because of that size.
Right.
Are you guys 100% just-in-time manufacturing?
What's that? Say that again.
Are you guys 100% just-in-time manufacturing, or do you guys have like a warehouse that you guys can actually store product?
We're about an 8% just-in-time. Everything else is planned and shipped in. So I'm working towards becoming more just-in-time, but at the moment with just the supply chain and stuff, it doesn't work that way. I don't know if you guys have noticed trying to buy things recently, especially in this industry. Everything's either out of stock or it has a delay getting in.
Well, that's why I would recommend companies go away from the just-in-time and start doing stock again, because you, in a case, what, for example, what happened last year, right, with everything being just-in-time, that was, as a consumer, that was one of the most frustrating things ever to me. For example, I bought a swimming pool last March. They said they were in stock, and 3 to 4 week lead time to get them shipped to me because they have to come on semis. It was a very large pool, and I kept watching. They're like, oh, yeah, there's no issue due to COVID because everything's in stock, right? I didn't get my pool till October. Come to find out,
right,
they're in stock means they were still building it. You were in a cube to have yours built. And as a consumer, if I would have had a product line that said, yeah, they're in the warehouse, I just need to get somebody in the warehouse to get it to you, they would have my business for life just because I'm, you know, as a consumer, I want it now.
Right. And I find those practices deceptive. When we say it's in stock, that means I can walk to the back, put my hands on it, and put it in a box.
Exactly. That's what it should be.
Yeah. We have helped and hurt ourselves with our honesty over the years for that type of reason.
Yeah.
You being able to tell people the honest answer is not always the best from a marketing perspective kind of thing. And we end up firing people like Amazon because they engage in deceptive practices. It doesn't do your brand any good when people are not knowing what the truth is.
So, Jason, are you, I'm going to reel us back into the government contracting piece thing a little bit. Are you guys have a CAGE code and SAMs and all that? Are you guys a registered government contractor?
We are registered with all that. We've just not done anything for the U.S. just yet.
Okay. Okay. No, well, you know, part of our job here is to help you get the word out about your company too. So I want to make sure that people understand that.
Yeah, we're registered and we've got all the paperwork filled out and we were being looked at for a few things. Matter of fact, I'm working on a few things right now that will be U.S., but we've just not to date actually done a contract. We've done some foreign aid stuff, but nothing. And by foreign aid, I mean foreign aid through the U.S. channels, but we've also done them independently. But we've not done an actual U.S. contract as of yet.
Okay. Somewhere we'll try to help you with.
Well, yeah, so let's continue on with that conversation right after a short break. And when we get back, we will talk with Jason a little bit more with Lucid Optics.
Sounds good.
This podcast is brought to you by CHAFA, the Colorado Housing and Finance Authority. Since 1974, CHAFA has strengthened Colorado by investing in community development and affordable housing. CHAFA's community development team partners with lenders across the state to offer the financing you need to grow your business. Talk to your local lender about CHAFA's Cash Collateral Support Program, which helps small and medium-sized businesses access capital that would otherwise be unavailable due to collateral shortfalls. To learn more, visit chfainfo.com. Welcome back to this week's Smalls Cast podcast. This week on the Smalls Cast, we have Jason Wilson from Lucid Optics. Welcome back, Jason.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Hey, Jason. So this is kind of the second half of the show for me. And so I shift gears slightly. I want to talk about kind of you personally and talk about, you know, some advice you might want to give to other small businesses out there as people look at getting going as a government contractor and how things kind of work and don't work. So to date, what's been your biggest challenge with regards to getting your company going? I mean, you told a little story there where you got laid off and decided to start your own business. What's been your biggest challenge kind of getting things rolling?
Biggest challenge is battling the big marketing budgets and getting the word out. It's interesting that 85% of my market shops big box stores, and if it is not on their shelves, it doesn't exist. And so there's a whole world of brands out there that don't get into big box either by intention or just by they're not big enough for them to actually pick them up, right?
Right.
And so if they're not in those stores or they're not on, you know, Outdoor Channel Wednesday Night at the Range with Midway USA, they don't exist. And that was one of the biggest challenges for the first 3 or 4 years getting going, getting people to understand that there are alternatives out there to what they can see commercially.
So we see that too, right? So Nate and I both work for a small company as well, you know, and the same thing happens here is you try to promote your company and get the word out about what you guys do and the products you can provide. So what have you done to kind of mitigate that? What are some of the things you've done?
We take advantage of social media pretty hard. We go and do shows, get in front of people and eyeballs. We also will do media stunts where we'll, like, for example, we have a ballistics summit. We hold it in Raton, New Mexico every year. It's the 9th through the 12th of September. If you guys want to come out, you should. We hold a media event. So this is a media event where we bring in other manufacturers that have synergies with what we do. Rifle makers, accessory makers. This year, PSA is coming out because we do some of their stuff for them. And then we bring media, PDN, bloggers, podcast folks, and we put them in contact with all the folks in the industry that we have brought in, right? What that does is when, say, Armaspec Parts is doing something and they have a Lucid Optics on top of theirs. So kind of in a guerrilla marketing sense, you'll see our optics on top of things that we didn't necessarily pay for the marketing budget to get into.
That's genius. But that's so that
becomes somebody else market for you.
So that's our idea, Jason, of the ecosystem, right? Is what we're trying to do in Colorado and really the Front Range as we've been expanding here is really look at how do we all help each other? Just what you talked about. How do we leverage our other teammates, our other companies out there, the manufacturers, the large companies, you know, the government agencies? How do we all collaborate and share information about each other to get the word out about, particularly, you know, our focus is always small government contractors. That's our heart. But you know, that all has to be part of that larger system that you're talking about. And those are some genius ideas.
Well, it's about relationships,
right?
You can have the best product on the planet, but if you don't have friends in the industry that agree that either it's a good product or they like you, you are destined to spend money a lot of times into the black hole of the marketing budgets. We work a lot with Shaw Barrels. They make a great precision rifle. They make excellent barrels for a lot of folks. And through that relationship, we have gotten to know Alex Crow Firearms and Armaspec Parts and Maxim Defense and all kinds of folks we would never have gotten introduced to if you didn't have the relationship with one of them. And in this industry, if you don't have relationships, nobody's really going to spend the time of day to talk to you, really.
I think that's
so you spend time supporting your friends. And that's really what we're doing from a marketing perspective. I found that 85% of my money is returnable if I do a relationship-driven marketing campaign.
I'm writing
this. If you don't do it with relationship media for it, it's about 18% of your money is returnable.
Right. Now, that's some great advice, honestly. Any other major challenge other than like getting the word out, fighting against the big guys?
I think what I heard him say is in his world, he doesn't turn down a conversation.
Yeah.
Because that's what we always say. It's all about those relationships.
Yep.
So now continue asking your question.
If you can understand what you do, I will have the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you never know where it's going to lead.
Right. Right. That's what we say too. That's our motto. Kind of. We should make that our motto on the website.
We can do that. We need to do that. Never turn down a conversation. Yeah.
Any other significant challenges you've had as far as like administratively or, getting like. Go ahead.
Yeah, so probably the biggest challenge from doing it on your own, starting your own business, is getting your business capitalized. Because you can starve it and grow it organically, and it's going to be really slow. So if you're going to do it, make sure you have access or can find the budget to be able to do what you need to do from a manufacturing side, a overhead side. You have to pay yourself. A lot of folks fall down on that one piece. You got to pay yourself, because if you don't, your business doesn't survive very long. So making sure you understand the finances involved in doing what you want to do, because almost 100% of the time when a business fails in its first 3 years, it's undercapitalization.
Right. So I was going to ask you,
and you're fine.
I was just going to ask you, how long do you think it took you to feel comfortable where you said, yeah, I'm actually my own company, moving on my own? Cause I have a friend who started a company. It's taken him about 2 years, 2.5 years now. So you think 3 years is a good mark?
3 years is probably the litmus test. If you are profitable north of 10% in 3 years, you're probably going to be okay. For me, it was a unique situation. I opened up with a single item. And I was profitable in 6 days.
Oh.
The market wanted what I needed and what I made. So mine was a little bit different. If you want to ensure yourself to be a company that can be growable, listen to your customers. They'll tell you what they want by bitching about what they don't have.
Yeah.
Then find a way to make that.
Yeah. So I'll switch slightly again on life skills. I ask a lot of our guests this. So, are there any, tools, applications, habits that you have found very useful as you've started your company?
Yeah, be willing to take time off.
I haven't heard that one yet.
Well, burnout's real.
Yeah, I know.
You can pour this thing. 18-hour days, and you can burn the candle at both ends, and you can make progress, but you get bogged down by the details, and you can't see the forest for the trees. Be willing to recharge your batteries and take some time off. A lot of times, my best ideas and process mapping happens when I am sitting in a hunting situation, or I'm sitting with a fly rod knee-deep in water. Once you disconnect a little bit, the juices start to flow and it works. So be willing to take time off.
That's some really good advice. I don't think anybody's ever said that, but that's me. I come back, I go on these long runs and people are like, where did you get these ideas? I'm like, I was out on like a 20-mile run. And they're like, really? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. And if you track that over time, you'll find that when you were trying to do some downtime, your brain actually cuts loose of all its restraints and works.
Right. Right. That's some really good advice, Jason. Really good advice. Any electronic things that you use? Any tools that are out there that you use for, I know everybody's got QuickBooks or whatever, but any other kind of tools that you use?
Are you looking like business systems and things like that?
Yeah, and calendars, or even like a personal thing that you use that you really like.
Yeah, something that you found that just makes your life easier as a business owner.
Yeah, absolutely. So not only is it super cost effective, but it's actually, for a small business getting started, it's very robust. There's a little web-based software out there called SalesBinder. And it is a inventory tracking, budget management software that allows you to, all the way through the manufacturing process, track your inventory, even if it's just the bill of materials and pieces and parts, or if it's finished goods. It'll put new customers in, allow you to build invoices from it, and it's web-based.
What was that called again? SalesBinder?
Yeah. I think we pay like $90 a year for it.
Oh, wow.
It's one of those things where you could spend thousands of dollars on your inventory tracking management system. And it'd be proprietary, and you'd have to have a programmer to come and make a tweak so you can do a specific operation. This one, it's web-based, and the folks that are developing it, they're out of Canada, and they do a pretty good job of listening to their customers. So you'll turn around and there'll be an update, and you'll have a new functionality that you were asking for yesterday.
Wow.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. No, see, that's what we're looking for, those kind of things. Because I think one day Nate and I are going to go back through all these podcasts and go, here's the lessons learned and the tools people are using. Because I think, you know, as you're going through the motions of expanding your business, scaling, using these different tools, you know, there's a guy right behind you who's trying to figure this out too. And if we can give people some advice, guidance, you know, some assistance on finding those things that work well for people, that's kind of what we're trying to get at here is, you know, what are the things that work well? What are some of the tools, habits that people do? Just you know, it's all good for everybody.
Another thing that is really, really handy when you're getting started is network. And don't just go out there blindly and shake hands. Listen to how people are talking. Learn how to communicate in your industry the way that people communicate. You can take all the creative writing classes you want, all the business writing classes, but if it doesn't fit in your market, you're going to be speaking Greek anyway. So network, go to SHOT Show, walk the floor, meet with people that you find their business model interesting, and just talk to them and listen to how they talk. You're not going to be an outsider if you do that.
Yeah. In other words, don't come to Middle Wyoming and wear a full five-piece suit trying to sell your optics. It's probably not going to go over too well.
No, that would be.
I'm
going to listen to you talk, but no.
We're going on a trip and we had a big discussion about, well, what's everybody wearing? And one of the guys says, it's coat and tie, right? And we're like, no.
Yeah. I don't mind dressing up from time to time for the right function, but my industry, for the most part, if you show up in a monkey suit, you are the odd man out.
Yeah.
The proverbial word in our circle is turd in a punch bowl.
Yeah.
You will stick out.
Yeah. So, hey, Jason, so how do folks get a hold of you guys? What's the website address, and how do they find out how to about your products and about you?
Sure. So 50,000 foot view, you're looking at lucidoptics.com. And then if you want to actually engage or reach out, it's real simple. It's jason@lucidoptics.com is an email.
And
all the contact information on the website as well.
Lucid is LUCID optics, right?
Correct.
OPTICS. One word, right?
Yep.
Lucid optics.
And Jason, spell your name for folks so that can be spelled multiple ways as well.
Yeah, JASON, the simple way.
There you go.
The normal way. Well, I can't say normal anymore either.
E-O.
Yeah.
So 1973 to 1977, evidently Jason was the name. Because there is a ton of us out there.
Interesting.
But only one Jason at Lucid Optics, right?
Yeah, probably
that's
not.
Correct.
No, there's three of us. Is my brother Larry, my other brother Larry.
Summit. Give me an example. We'll go to Ballistic Summit, and let's see, there were nine of us.
Nine Jasons.
Wow.
Hey, so that event, so when is that event? You said it's the 9th through the 12th of September.
September. We do it at the Whittington Center in Raton, New Mexico. What we do is we take over competitive housing, and the manufacturers and the media stay together. We have some product seminars. We have range time, and we feed you, and the bar is open. The second you take a drink, you are done at the range for the rest of the day.
That's a good way to do it.
The Ballistic Summit. Is there a website for that as well, or is that by invite only?
At the moment, it's invite only. If you guys want to get more information, reach out to me via email, and I'll get you in.
Okay, that's great. Yeah. Hey, this was a very good conversation, Jason. I actually learned a lot today. That was pretty good.
Good.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it.
For our listening audience as well, you know, I ask you to reach out to Jason and Lucid Optics if you have questions about the scopes, about what they're offering, as well as the
I'd even make
summit.
It larger than that. So there's a lot of aspects of this that he could use in the DoD as well. Just the capabilities that they have. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm sure, Jason, I'm sure you would entertain conversation from anybody if somebody's thinking outside the box of what to do with your tech, right?
Absolutely. And we're actually more open to that now than ever because we're in the process of building infrastructure here at our facility and bringing some of the manufacturing home. So it's going to be more U.S. made here from here on out.
I did want to ask one other question before we end things here. Are you talking to the PTAC, the Procurement Technical Assistance Center there in Wyoming?
I have not had that conversation yet.
That's somewhere we would definitely point you that direction. As a government contractor, that's normally the first place we send people is to the PTAC.
Oh, okay.
They do a lot to help you kind of get going. Sounds like you've already done some of the steps, but they can help you connect to the larger picture.
Page code. Well, what's kind of cool, so first of all, it's all free for you, so keep that in mind. Their job is to help people exactly like you actually get into the government contracting world and get their first contract. So what they can do is they can help you set up on their own, what they call bid match, which they will send you. Matter of fact, we, Dennis and I, when we set up for our company, we actually chose,
too many.
Well, we chose weapon systems, I think is one of the things that our company would do. And we were getting like 1,000 hits a day of saying, oh yeah, well, you know, there's optics here. There's, you know, gun barrels here. You can manufacture for this company or this entity, a government entity. But the point being is go talk with them. It's all free. Sign up free of charge and they will help you, make those connections. They have events all of the time, all over the country.
Yeah, and they're local, so they're in Wyoming. We have several in Colorado, so if they're not, you know, super user friendly up there, which I'm sure they are, you know, you can reach out to the PTACs down here too, either in, you know, the northern part of Colorado or wherever, we can help you do that as well.
I'd like that. If you can send me some information via email, let's work on it.
Yep,
we will send that off to you, and we've thoroughly enjoyed the conversation, Jason. This is it's good to know, refreshing. I like the idea of we've had pretty good luck with bringing companies like yours on the show because it's you're not fully involved. Like you said, you haven't had a big contract yet with the government. However, that's, you know, I think that's part of your goal someday is you would sell to anybody, right? I mean, that's the whole point. So
within reason, I have turned down certain countries just because of who they are.
Well, okay. Within the United States, you probably won't turn down any of the forces if they want to contact you, right?
Domestic business, we're open.
There you go. Okay, Jason, once again, thank you for coming on the show today. For those listening out there, this was interesting for everybody listening. LucidOptics.com, LucidOptics.com. Dennis, anything?
Nope, that's great. Thank you very much, Jason.
I appreciate the time, guys.
No, we appreciate it as well, and we will be in touch via email. And till next week, guys, this is The Smalls signing off.
Thanks for listening.
You've reached the end of another episode of The Smalls Cast podcast. Connect with us at thesmalls.org. Don't forget to sign up to our newsletter to receive our free materials. See you at the next episode.
See you at the next episode.